Good afternoon, and welcome to another episode of El Paso Prime Time. I'm Richard Dayu, President and CEO of the Greater El Paso Chamber of Commerce, and it's my great pleasure today to not only have as my guest one of the most knowledgeable people in education, public education, as well as post-secondary in our community, but also a very dear friend of mine, Dr. Armando Aguirre. Today, because he wears so many hats, I have to kind of keep track of them, he is the Executive Director of the Region 19 Education Service Center. Welcome, Armando.
Thank you. I'm excited to be here.
Thank you for doing this. Armando and I have a lot to share with you today relative to education. And so without further ado, I'd like to go ahead and get us started. And maybe by educating our audience, no pun intended, we could talk a little bit about how we connected together through UTEP. Would you care to share that with them, please?
Sure. A few years back when I was working at Mission Early College as a principal of that school, I was asked if I was interested in coming to work for UTEP. And that changed everything in regards to my take on education. So it really was for the betterment anyway. And in that conversation, I was asked to oversee the El Paso Collaborative for Academic Excellence. And so in that conversation with Dr. Natalicio, I was honored and accepted to take on that task. And so at our first meeting, I found out that you were part of it. And
yeah. So at the time, I think I was the only, I'll call myself a civilian. I was the only non-educator on that entire collaborative. Why don't we explain to our audience a little bit about what the collaborative is? The collaborative is, it's been formed now, it's been almost, I think, 20 years.
Actually, it's been over 20
years. Why don't you explain to our audience what the collaborative is and what its mission is?
When the collaborative started 25-plus years ago, the intent was to close the gap between the various subgroups in education and trying to streamline the process by which students learned in our public schools with the help of the university, with the help of the community. And in working together, they started finding out that there were so many disconnects between what public education was doing and what the university was teaching. And so they were able to start streamlining that process and helping each other and trying to come up with better ways to educate the teachers who, in essence, then taught our students. And so what's come of that over the span of 20-plus years is this idea that working together with the community, working together with the superintendents, with the presidents of both El Paso Community College and UTEP, we could then start understanding what best works for our students from the El Paso area.
Great, thank you. And so he's too modest to brag about his educational experience. But Dr. Aguirre, as he mentioned casually, that he was at the Mission Early College. But for those of you who don't know what the Early College program is, it's a program that actually Dr. Aguirre launched and was the principal of the very first early college high school in El Paso. And the early college high school program is designed specifically to help high school students who apply to be in the program, do they not?
Yes, they do. They do. They do apply. There are some certain standards, but backing up a little bit to my opportunity to work with Mission Early College High School, it goes back to when Dr. Rhodes was president of EPCC and Dr. Duron was at Socorro ISD, and they together discussed the idea of opening the first early college in El Paso, and I was fortunate to be the one selected as the principal. With that then came the responsibilities of hiring everybody that was going to work the school, but more importantly, coming up with what the requirements were going to be, what our end goals would be. And we decided that the most important thing for us was to increase the opportunities for students to get their associate's degree, specifically students who were first generation, at risk, low socioeconomic. But the intent was to get those students without making an issue of that specific criteria, but really looking for students who met the criteria but were also interested in expanding their knowledge and their college opportunities. And so it became a very exciting time for me in the sense that we focused on looking at students from a different perspective. I found that there were many a student who were very enthusiastic about their education, but they were also set to go in their high schools. But in that mix, there were many a student who somehow ended up lost in the shadows. And those students were the ones I was trying to go after. And I sought them out. And in those conversations, I found out that there's actually more kids who don't necessarily get the limelight than we think. And those are the students that ended up making up the first few classes. And I believe since then that make up the majority of the early college students. Those are students who have great potential. Many teachers would tell you they have potential, but in many cases, they don't believe it and they don't see it. And it's not until they're put in a position to where they can excel do they find that they are really very strong educational-wise, but also great individuals that had a lot to offer.
I agree with you. And just for the benefit of our audience, I think it's clear we need to clear up something. So these students who are in early college high school begin in ninth grade. They and their parents have to make the commitment. As they enter as freshmen, they will stay all the way through their senior year and graduate. When they graduate high school, they now have a degree, an associate's degree from a community college, 2 years. And that does a lot of things for them. And number one, as Dr. Gidde pointed out, it gives them the belief in themselves that they can do well in post-secondary education. But just as importantly, for them and for their parents, it enables them to more likely afford the ability to complete a 4-year post-secondary education because they already have 2 years under their belts. Now, today we have how many early college high schools in El Paso?
If I remember correctly, I believe we're up to eight.
Eight.
With the ninth one on the way.
That's wonderful. That's wonderful. And that really gives these kids a great opportunity. And because of the way it's structured, it forces them to be disciplined in their education rather than as a typical high school, and we've all been through that, so we know how many opportunities there are for diversion at a typical high school. And it takes a disciplined kid and a disciplined parent to say, stay focused on your coursework and not all the extracurricular activities, correct?
Exactly. Well, just recently I found out something that I thought was pretty interesting that I haven't shared before. Students who graduate from a early college with their associate's degree are 10 times more likely to complete their bachelor's degree. And so when you think of that, it's astronomical, and that's just great when we think of the number of students that we're impacting. Definitely, we're right now, if we look at the number of students who are taking advantage of it, though, you're talking about possibly 5% of the student population.
Right. One of the discussions that we've had numerous times at the Collaborative with Dr. Natalicio and Dr. Serrata from the community college, who is a key partner in this process along with the districts themselves, is the difficulty economically, financially, of scaling the program to expand it enough to reach more of our kids in all of our school districts.
Exactly. Yeah, if there's a drawback to early colleges, is that we are unfortunately reaching out to only a handful of students in the bigger scheme of things. So the next step would be to say, okay, how do we scale it? And I believe that's the next work of the El Paso Collaborative. And that's where we've been working closely with the districts, not only the big three, El Paso ISD, Socorro, and Islara, but also the other nine. We're actually looking at it from a standpoint of, if we're trying to increase the number of students who get their post-secondary degree, which from various studies say that we need that in order for us to continue to grow as a community, then we need to find other ways to do that. And dual credit has been one way, and we felt that if we look at it from that standpoint, if you think of early college is dual credit. I mean, students are taking college classes while taking their high school classes, so then why not take that same concept and take a process that's already been in place, but maybe hasn't been expanded as much as possible. So that's kind of where we're at now. And so with the help of other districts, with Community College and UTEP, and of course business members that are part of our collaborative, we're beginning to see that if we work together, there is a possibility to start expanding it by focusing on various areas. One would be then, of course, who's going to teach the classes? Two, how do we increase the number of students who become aware and qualified to take the classes? And then finally, how do we cover some of those expenses? Because with every program initiative, there is a cost. And I believe that's where it's been helpful to have the local community and business community get involved, because they've been able to tap into some areas. We're in the education business, not necessarily in the money-making business. And so when we look at what the collaborative has done, it's helped us tap into other sources of people who are able to bring in resources that help us.
I don't want to digress too far because we have a limited amount of time,
okay,
and we'll be getting to the subject at hand, which is dual credit. But just this morning, just as a piece of information, the Chamber's Education Division held its monthly Education Committee meeting, and we did it off campus from the Chamber. And this morning we did it at the El Paso Leadership Academy, which is a charter school. But it's a completely different dynamic than almost any charter school I've seen anywhere in the country. And the programs that they're running now, they have 6th and 7th graders. They started off with one class. Now they've expanded to two classes, so they have a 6th and 7th. And their goal is to then accelerate and have a high school they can feed their students into to participate in the academic side, but partner with other school districts so that the kids who are reaching the high school level and are doing academically exceptionally well will also be able to participate in the other non-scholastic events, the extracurricular programs, football, sports, basketball, baseball, cheer, whatever it might be, soccer, but also still be able to get that education because they are very narrowly funded. They're funded by the state just like any school district is, but they have to provide their own facilities. So they can't afford, nor do they have a desire to go out and invest in lots of infrastructure that's very costly to not only acquire but to maintain. And one of the conversations we had from that, now we're going from post-secondary, we're talking about preparing them for post-secondary. And their efforts is now to work with the EPISD in particular to see if there are ways to partner with them to scale their program and expand it. Because the school districts don't have the luxury of trying out these new dynamics and these new teaching environments where you have open classrooms without desks, and they sit at round tables, and then they go outside for part of the day to teach outdoors. I mean, these are just things that are not realistic in a typical school district simply because of the size. But I find that some of the things you were saying very interesting because they seem to align. There, you find these models that work really well. Now, how do we find ways to scale them so we can make them more accessible to more of our students and help them all equally, right?
Yeah, that's the intent. I mean, of course, the more we can, when we find something that works, then it makes sense to expand. So to the case of the Paso del Norte Academy, that's exciting that they're trying new things, and we also work with them through Region 19. So I'm glad to see that they're trying new approaches, and hopefully they'll take off and they'll be successful. But in going back to the dual credit and how we've found that if we're going to help students get their college degree, then it's the best time to start is while in high school. Because if we take too long, now I'm talking about the masses. You know, you could focus. You could argue that the top 25% of the student population, or those who come from middle to upper middle homes, are going to go on to college and possibly be successful. But if we're talking about the majority of the student population, then we're talking about having to change our perspective and how we go about reaching out to them. So the best thing to do is to say, okay, instead of us waiting for them to graduate, why not bring college to them at an early age? And that's exactly what we've been able to do with dual credit.
Perfect segue. So why don't you begin by explaining to our audience exactly what dual credit is, and then we'll go from there.
Okay. Dual credit is an opportunity for students to take high school class that is a core subject in most cases and a college class that is part of their basic minimum requirements and mesh them together. Example would be a government class or an English 3 class with college English 1 or U.S. history with college U.S. history. Those are courses that are required at both areas And so why not go ahead and align them and have the student meet the state requirements for high school, but also meet the university requirements for the college credit? And if you could do both, which our students are doing, then they walk away with one in their high school and then one is their college credit.
So the more, for the benefit of our listening audience, the more dual credit classes a student can take while they're still in high school, the fewer courses they have to take when they get into college, at least during those first 2 years when they have to get all their requirements out of the way anyway, right?
Yes, and so there's three things that come from that.
Right.
One is the obvious, which is the cost savings. Because now these hours that we would have to have paid as a parent and or a student are already done, so they don't have to cover those. Two, the time it takes to take those courses is saved, so those students save some time. But I think the third one that many times we don't focus on is this idea of life getting in the way. And so the further out our goal mark is, the more difficult it is to reach it. But if we can shorten that time span, then we increase the opportunity, hence the number of hours or a number of students who are successful when they take dual credit. There's another study that said that if a student takes at least one dual credit class, they double their chances of graduating
college.
College.
Right.
Good point. And completing their college degree. And what's even more astonishing is if they're in the bottom half of their class and they take a dual credit class, they're four times more likely to complete their college degree. So I think those are very significant numbers that I think we need to look at and say, okay, there's something to be said for that. And keep in mind, if we're talking about increasing the number of students, not only the top 25, but we're talking about now the masses, then we need to look at every opportunity, and this is one of them.
Excellent. Thank you. And so also for clarification, you can only take dual credit classes as a junior or senior in high school. Is that correct?
Well, that was the case up until this past year. With this past legislative session, the law has changed. Now a student, as early as a freshman year, can take a dual credit class. Now that's something that the schools didn't have to catch up to because the law just went into play. Keep in mind, they still have to have the minimum standard. They have to pass the TSI, and they have to be able to take the course based on meeting the minimum standards. But if they do that, then what that does right now is much like an early college, where a high school student at an early college, they start as early as their freshman year, could conceivably complete their associate's degree. Right now, with dual credit, because they only had their junior and senior year, they were only able to take, and the law only allowed them at the time to only take one dual credit class per semester. Now it's not limited to one. Hence, a student could actually take.
That's great. Armando, what does TSI stand for, please?
TSI stands for Texas Success Initiative. And what it does, it's a measure, college entrance exam, and it's a measure of minimum standards. In order for a student to take a college course, they have to meet that minimum standard. That's regardless of where you go to school.
Thank you. Thank you. By the way, from my own personal experience, and I didn't even know my son was doing it, I have a 19-year-old who is about to finish his junior year, excuse me, his sophomore year here at the University of Texas, El Paso, and he's only been out of high school a year, and he got there because he had 19 dual credit hours when he graduated high school of his own initiative. I didn't even know he was taking these classes. So the big issue about dual credit for us and the reason for our conversation today is the initiative that we're trying to pursue collaboratively, no pun intended, with Dr. Serrata and Dr. Natalicio and the three largest school districts, as well as Canutillo and others, to expand the pipeline. So let's talk about expanding the pipeline. What does that mean?
Well, what that would mean is that if we go back to even last year, we have increased the number of dual credit students by 1,200 students. And even then, it's only a small portion. If you think of the number of high school students, you're talking about 12,000 per year, 48,000 students. And right now, we're reaching about 4,500. So you can imagine the number that's still out there that we can really tap into. And the intent, again, is to increase the number of students who can start their post-secondary degrees at an earlier age and increase the opportunities or potential to complete their degrees.
Thank you. So this is our opportunity to plug the Collaborative for Academic Excellence, because it is through that initiative that we have decided collectively. I made jokingly a comment about my being initially the only member of that group from the, that's, you know, not in the education arena. But we also have Mr. Terry McGreehan from ADP, who's been an incredible supporter of education in our community, UTEP in particular, as well as funding for programs to help advance the program. And so our kudos to ADP and Terry McGreehan. But part of the initiative here to expand this pipeline is to be able to get more teachers who are in those critical fields that we talked about earlier certified, get their accreditation to teach dual credit classes. And an accreditation requires...
Well, in order to be credentialed to teach a dual credit, you have to first have your master's degree, but then you have to have 18 hours in the field of study. And so because of that, we have many a teacher who had their master's but were short some hours in their area. And companies such as ADP, Bank of America, they shared.
Wells Fargo.
They were able to help us out. And we also got a grant, or UTEP did, from the Metals Foundation to help offset the El Paso Electric Company is another one,
right,
who really helped us out. So, you know, it's been great to see these companies come together and put up the resources to get more teachers. So now the districts were able to go back and talk to their teachers and say, if you're interested in going back to school, we have funding in order for you to complete those hours. Because you're right, if we're gonna increase the number of students who become dual credit students, that's one thing. But in order to do that, we have to make sure that we have the teachers in place to teach that.
That's the pipeline we're talking about.
That's the pipeline we're
talking about. So I just want to underscore how important this initiative is. By the way, I would be remiss if I did not express publicly the appreciation we have for CREED. CREED is an organization known as the Council on Regional Economic Expansion and Education Development. And CREED, led by a number of folks in our community, some of whom are household names, Woody Hunt, Richard Castro from the McDonald's franchises, and a host of other folks, Raymond Palacios and others, who have put up a significant amount of money, I believe $400,000 they've committed, to help pay for teachers to get either their accreditation and or their master's degrees so we can expand that pipeline, have more students going through the program. And so the message that we want to share with all who are listening, but most especially the parents and the students out there, to take advantage of dual credit programs where it's available to you, because it's really an investment in your future and will help save you money as you go off to college, complete your education sooner, and prepare you for the workforce sooner. That's usually good news for the parents, bad news for the kids. I think that's how it works. Are there any closing thoughts you'd like to share with us, Dr. Aguirre?
I just think it's exciting. It's an exciting time to see where the resources have been put up by our business community. Our teachers have been given an opportunity to expand their knowledge base, but then more importantly, to do exactly what we've set out to do, which is to increase the number of students who receive post-secondary degrees. If you look at any measure at any district, one of the things they want to do, and at the state level as well, they're saying we need to increase the number of post-secondary students and them getting degrees. And I think this opportunity lends itself to exactly doing that. And so if we continue building on it, I think we've just tipped the iceberg. There's so much more with the tip of the iceberg. There's so much more that we can do in terms of expanding it. And I see it happening. So just keep an eye on that, and you'll see the numbers increase as the time passes.
Thank you. An interesting statistic, which is not one that we're happy about, but it's one we're going to change, to your point. Only 21% of our students who graduate high school complete a four-year education today. And so our goal is to move that bar way up and compete against the national numbers that are being benchmarked across the country. Well, I want to thank you again, Dr. Getty, for joining us today and sharing this information. I hope it's been helpful to our listening audience and it will benefit them. My closing comment on the show today is to remind everyone out there, as we close into the end of the year and all of us are looking for opportunities for tax deductions for our tax returns, one of my favorite organizations to support financially and otherwise is KTEP. So if you will think about this right now and start talking about writing a check to contribute to KTEP this year, it'll go right into your tax deduction for your tax return that's due on April 15th. So that's my little plug unsolicited plug, I might add, for my favorite radio station in El Paso, KTEP. This is Richard Deyoub, and this is El Paso Primetime. Thank you again for listening.